outside the box of religious obligation lies a road less travelled, into the heart of the father's affection. Slinging freedom all over the place, this is the God Chain. The God Chain. The God
Chain. Just go laugh. That's how you start. Just laugh. That's good.
I don't know if you pushed the button or not.
Oh, I pushed it all right. That's Julie Williams laughing her head off. We don't usually podcast on Monday morning. My brain doesn't function that well, but I'm Wayne Jacobson, and I've got Julie in the house today.
Hello.
My daughter, my friend. It always makes me happy when you come in, and on school day, you brought one of the kids.
I know. That's never a good sign.
That even makes it tougher. He's got coronavirus out here.
Definitely not. He seems fine, right? Like a kind of where I think I may have been bamboozled. No, I'm not sure.
Well, you're following the rules. You know, Self-segregate? That's not the word.
I don't know.
I lost it.
Isolation?
Self-isolate. Yeah. He threw up last night, so it's supposed to be 24 hours before he goes back to school.
Yeah.
Even though it was food poisoning or something.
Yeah,
like that.
Middle of the night, man. That's the way to wake up, let me tell you.
That's not the way to wake up. My goodness.
Hello, Monday morning.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
So he seems okay, and he's down there with Zoe, so that made Zoe's day. Zoe's happy.
And he made his sisters mad because they had to go to school, and he got to go to Grandma and Grandpa's, so it's a total win for him today.
Wow. It pays to be sick. That's the rules. I heard you had a little coronavirus issues at Costco this week, huh?
Oh, gosh. You don't want to get me started on that.
I do. You were funny yesterday. That's great. Let's get started on that.
No, I'm going to offend somebody.
Well, Costco was just crazy. People were buying stuff.
Yeah. And, you know, I am a little oblivious to the news these days and went there just with my normal shopping trip and couldn't get to the eggs. I wanted eggs and didn't want water.
Was there a run on eggs?
Everybody was in line for water. And I tried to like maneuver my cart down to the eggs and people were like not having it, thinking I'm cutting. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I just want eggs, guys.
Okay, so, for us Costco neophytes, is the water near the eggs?
Yes, it's behind the eggs. There's like a little refrigerator room, and the water's behind it. So all these people are lined up down the store for water. And I'm like, I don't want water. I just want eggs. So I parked my cart back in the produce department and walked, and I still was getting grief. People are looking at me like, where do you think you're going? And I walked in and got my eggs and walked out, and it took everything in me not to just laugh at these crazy people. Like, I'm sorry if you're out there buying water. I apologize. I'm not trying to be disrespectful, but I don't get it.
They might be from Flint, Michigan. They might really need water.
Okay, then yes.
But coronavirus
in
water.
In Southern California, our water is being turned off. I don't understand.
Is that the fear? The water's being turned off?
No, I have no idea.
Or the coronavirus has gotten in our water?
Yeah.
Or...
And I think I was the only person that was checking out that didn't have water and toilet paper in their cart. The cash register lady, who I know because I'm there every week, and so I know her, and she just like, so you're not stocking up, are you? And I'm like, kind of feel like I should be, but I'm not falling into that trap. So
you have your own personal checkout person at Costco?
Not personal. I just got to know, you know, I'm sure mom is the same way. She knows everybody. So,
well, I guess she does. She never talks about it, though.
No.
Like the lady looking at my cart saying, you're not buying, not stocking up on the stuff.
I have this lady. She's super nice. I always look for her line because I'm always there the same day and she's there the same day. And so.
So when do you expect they're going to cancel school?
I suspect it's coming.
Do you really?
I do. Yeah.
Wow.
With the panic I saw at the store, all the messages that we're already getting from the schools, I would be surprised if it doesn't, if they don't close, if it continues to escalate as it seems it is. Slowly but surely.
It's kind of like a big log jam, right? No one's canceling school yet, but as soon as somebody does then it'd be crazy. Because then
we have to, if they are. And if you have enough parents that are freaking out and not sending their kids to school, then, I mean, that's going to domino effect. And why have school at that point if half the school's gone? So
I'm still really confused about this. I know everybody seems like it's like this real important pandemic that's going to wipe out, you know, the world.
Yeah.
But people, even in China, I mean, there are people who died, elderly people, whatever.
Right.
But for the most part,
people are okay.
Young people have a few days of runny nose.
Yeah.
How you separate that from the normal runny nose?
Yeah. Yeah. No, I don't. I am not the one to talk to because I do not get it. I am waiting for someone to explain this to me.
Do you think it's, I wonder if it's not just politicians where you can't get yelled at for overreacting. But you will get yelled at for underreacting. If you don't do something and a lot of people die, then they're going to be on your case.
Right.
But if you do a lot of stuff and then nothing bad happens, you can say it worked.
Right.
We did our stuff, man. We
were prepared.
I look at that with travel coming up. I don't know what travel I'm going to get to do. I guess I'm not going to Italy anytime soon, but I hadn't planned to.
Yeah, not going there.
My gosh. It's just...
And even like the cold medicine's all sold out of stores. Well, I have a girlfriend I was talking to last week, and she's like, yeah, my kid is sick and I needed cold medicine, and every place was sold out of what I needed. My kid is sick right now. Like, not with the coronavirus, just sick and needs medication to feel better. So...
This is going to be like Y2K people. You stocked up on all this stuff. Then you got to open a store in your neighborhood to resell it to everybody else.
Some person had three things of Costco-sized toilet paper. I'm like, that would last my family 2 years. Like, what are you going to do with that? I don't get it.
Keep everybody else from getting it.
Sell it later for like, you know, $20 a roll. I don't know.
So if you're a hoarder of toilet paper and water this time, write us. We'd love to know what's going on because we're missing it. Whatever it is we're supposed to be doing, we're not doing
it. I understand like hand sanitizer or like cleaning products to disinfect. Okay, I'll give you that. I get it. Like I bought some hand sanitizer. Just I use it anyways, but I don't understand water and toilet paper.
I think the sooner you get it and the sooner you build up antibodies against it, the better off you are.
That is true.
The whole idea of trying to avoid it. Now, that's not medical advice. I am not giving medical advice
on
this.
So if we catch it, we'll invite you over.
Maybe I'll come over and give everybody a kiss and see what happens. I'm not concerned yet, but I don't know anybody who is. I mean, I just know Oklahoma. Nobody's talking about it. I don't get it totally.
Yeah.
Anyway.
But I think, you know, getting notices from the school feeds into the fear that's kind of started, you know, that people, if they're not worried about it, oh, now the school's talking about it. So, you know, now they've sent home a message and now they've sent home, now they're calling about it. So that just makes everything escalates.
Yeah, I was talking to a pastor guy from Italy on video chat on Friday morning, and he was saying Rome's streets were absolutely deserted. They've closed every school, every university.
Yep.
There's no tourism. There's just
crazy.
Choked the whole place down. And it seems like it's already all over Italy. So it's kind of like, when do you finally say, look, we lost containment on this thing? Because I think you have. I think you've lost containment. It's in the culture. There's no way to quarantine everybody who has it.
Well, that's why I wonder, like, if they're doing that, is it effective? Like, if you tell everybody stay home and you're closing all the businesses down, is it effective? Is it actually helping to contain it?
Or if you keep people on ships, on cruise ships off the coast, where people on the boat actually have it and are passing it on to everybody else on the ship.
Yeah.
I just think they don't have a good handle on this thing.
That's
government work, I guess. You can't prepare for everything. Somebody ate a pangolin or something. Pangolin. And either that or some reports say, what are you laughing?
I don't know what that is.
A pangolin? It's like a little armadillo. It's a Chinese armadillo.
Okay.
Somebody ate it, or China was developing a weapon and it got out of the lab, or, you know, a little bit of news would be nice in this culture. We have no news left. We have advocacy channels. We have agenda. We got no real hard news from anybody anymore. And that's going to be tough for our culture to navigate.
Yeah. So you didn't worry about the coronavirus on this last trip? Because it kind of did you in.
The coronavirus or the trip?
I think it was the trip.
I have never come home that I can recall more exhausted from a trip than this Oklahoma trip.
Wow.
And I just, it was full on. It was, oh my gosh, 7 in the morning, 8 in the morning to 10 at night, and a constant, ever-changing set of audiences. And with this new book out, The Language of Healing, it just opens up a whole nother realm of conversations with people who are struggling with stuff along with whether politics or sexuality or race or whatever. It's just opened up all kinds of stuff. So yeah, this was as crazy a trip as I've ever been on, just in terms of how grueling it was. And I came home, and by Sunday, I was scared to be in a conversation with somebody because I was afraid I would forget what I wanted to say because I was so tired I couldn't keep thoughts in my head. So fortunately, Sunday was just hanging out with some of my old college buddies. So it wasn't a pressing day. It was just telling old college stories, which I still had in my head, and just hanging out with some old friends. So that was a great day. But my goodness, and some amazing conversations. I mean, but what really is hard on trips like this, because you start here 3 days in Enid and you wear those people out. But then you go to Norman and it's a whole fresh room.
They're not tired.
They have not worn them out.
They're excited. They're ready.
I only got one day with them. And then, boom, I'm off to another place. And this was probably talk about this more on a podcast down the road somewhere. But I had a call from some folks, part of a ministry in the Edmond area that went through a painful betrayal. And they asked me if I knew anything about betrayal.
Nah, nothing.
I'm just going, man, you know what? I have my doctorate in betrayal. I wish somebody gave a doctorate because I've got it. I've got point. And so just talking about the way Christians screw over each other. I'm going to use the bad language, but it's amazing. It's all the same. It's always the same. Lies and got to destroy your character, or God told me I get to do this to you, or it's just the constant same set of stuff that I've been through, that others are going through. And just because somebody wants what they want and they don't have the, or they live in the cognitive dissonance that I can't just say I want this. I've got to get God on my side. God's got to want this for me, and you've got to be a bad guy so I can separate myself from you. So there's no sitting down and just saying, you know what, we're doing this thing together and I'm not comfortable doing this thing together. Can we find a gentle way, nice way to maybe to part ways and go on to what God's asked us to do? But that's not there. Back to Paul and Barnabas, you know, they and Acts, they had this violent disagreements, couldn't get along. And so they split up in anger and they come back together later. I am just tired. I am so tired of people who are pretending to follow Jesus can't be honest and genuine and tender and gracious with each other, much less the world.
It's weird. Like, why is that? Like, when you're followers of Jesus and you're going to live how Jesus lived, why is it that you find it so much in this Christian realm?
You know, here's the cynic I am. I think it demonstrates that we're not actually following Jesus. Mm. We're following a religion called Christianity, and that's made us even more demanding of our will and more right when we think we want something. It's God with us. I think if someone cannot even... I mean, I've told people, look, when I get involved in collaboration with people, if someday you decide you don't want to be in this anymore, come talk to me. I will find you a gracious way out. I will give up stuff I have in it to get out for you. And I've said that to everybody I've been in collaboration with for the last 20 years, ever since the pastoral thing happened. And I think it just says, you know what? What did George Washington say about democracy? He said, I think democracy asks more of humans than humans are capable of giving, something like that. And I really do think kindness and generousness and gentleness, even if you want to part ways with me, just do it great. There's gracious ways to have the conversation. I'm not going to make you do anything you don't freely choose to do.
Right.
So you don't have to lie to me. You don't have to claim God. Because I think if anything, that's what taking God's name in vain is. It's God told me to cheat you, that I can lie to you, that I can change my mind in midstream, even though you've put a lot into this. I can do all that to you. And I think it just proves who we're really following. We're not in fact following Jesus. We like to think we are. Mm-hmm. But people are actually following their own self-will and using whatever they have to justify it. So that continues to go on.
Yeah.
We had two great days with Arnita in Edmond. She came up did a workshop for the folks in Arnita. She was there a night and a morning, and then I carried on the afternoon. She had to get back to Dallas. But she was gracious enough to come up and hang with us.
And that's great.
People loved it. Oh, my gosh. We had a great room full of people. And you could tell for conservative Oklahoma, talking about being generous to the other side is a stretch. It is a stretch. In fact, I had to actually check because we found out there was a restaurant that has the best chicken, fried chicken, in all of Oklahoma. But they told me Arnita wouldn't be welcome there. And I'm like,
really?
Seriously? In this day and age? And say, yeah, guys are redneck. Fortunately, we weren't going to dinner there with Arnita. That was a ways away from where we were.
But that still exists.
But then when Arnita and Michael were coming up, they were talking about where we're going to eat. And I said, listen, I need to make sure it's friendly for them. They're going to be welcome there. And they look at me like, what are you talking about? I said, well, I heard about a restaurant that wasn't. So I don't care if it's got the best barbecue, the best fried chicken, whatever. I'm making sure my friends are welcome. If my friends aren't welcome, and now I don't care that this guy has the best fried chicken in Oklahoma. I will never taste it. I will never set foot in that place. But
yeah,
we had a great time, though. People were real, jumped right in, very real about what their struggles were. And so we got a chance to really go through stuff with people.
Very cool.
Yeah. And then it was on to Tulsa. And Tulsa, people don't know, Tulsa had a huge race massacre. I used to call it the Tulsa Race Riots. They've now changed it to the Tulsa Race Massacre because it really wasn't a riot. It kind of puts it like maybe the blacks had a riot. This was the whites killing, they don't, not even sure how many, 150, 200, just a mob of whites upset about some guy looking at a white woman. And just, I don't know all the details of it, but it's huge. They're coming up on the 100th anniversary of it. They're trying to figure out as a community how to negotiate it.
Yeah.
So people have really latched on to A Language of Healing, and only because of the book cover. No one has read it yet there.
Oh, so, really?
Yeah. So
just
it's like,
of the title?
Wow, this could be really good. So someone gave one to the mayor. We've got one to some other people that are involved in the conversations. And they're really nervous because they're actually looking for a couple of mass graves that their history kind of records that a lot of bodies were just shoved into and buried after the riot. I mean, it is the worst example of racial violence in America from what they say. And so the community, when I was in Tulsa 4 years, never heard about it. People I know have lived in Tulsa 50 years have never heard about it. It's been buried.
Wow.
But they're actually now going to make the community face up to it. And as part of this anniversary thing, which is not a celebration, man, it's just a memorial of a horrible thing that happened. And they said, I talked to some people who were there that said, when I was in college back there, black people could not live south of Admiral Street, which is way up on the north side. You couldn't live.
And you didn't know that when you were there?
I didn't know that. And I also said,
were there black people around, like at the college?
At the university there were.
There were.
But in the city itself, it was, and you couldn't be, as one black person told me, after nighttime, you wouldn't be caught south of Admiral in Tulsa.
Wow.
So, yeah. So it was a wild trip. I came home really just mine for 3 days. I'm just sitting here going, I can't concentrate. And I'm just tired. I'm emotionally and mentally exhausted.
Yeah.
So catching my wind now, though, kind of getting back at
it. You seem better now.
Yeah. Kind of all working again. So
that's good.
Kyle, after being on the last podcast, sent me this thing about lawnmower parents.
Oh.
And he said, you and Julie probably had to talk about lawnmower parents. I'd never heard of lawnmower.
I haven't either, but you sent this to me, and I have to admit, I kind of died laughing. I thought it was kind of funny.
Yeah, helicopter parents I know well.
Yes, I heard that when I was a new parent.
And I'm not even sure this is all that different. How do you see the difference?
I don't know. I think this is more...
Somebody wanted a cute nickname for their own artifact.
Yeah, well, this is more, I'm going to plow over everything that's going to create a problem for my kid. And I feel like the helicopter was more of like a hovering. I'm going to just kind of hover over and make sure everything is okay. I feel like this is more aggressive.
Ah, because a helicopter parent will swoop in.
Yes.
When something needs to be adjusted.
But they're kind of waiting. And I feel like they're seeing something that's like miles down the road and they're already wiping it out.
May never happen, but doggone, I'm not.
Yeah,
I'm not sure this doesn't get to
happen.
My kids.
Uh-huh.
So are you a helicopter parent?
So I don't. Okay.
I like that. This is good.
I'll fess up. So I heard about this helicopter parenting thing when I had, I think, Amy, maybe Lindsay, like young. And I read some article about it, and it made me stop in my tracks. And I went, whoa, this isn't healthy. I don't think I want to be this kind of parent. And it did kind of change my thinking a little bit to kind of, I don't want, it's okay for them to struggle a little bit. And since then, I'm okay with letting my kids kind of sort it out a little bit. So I think that's why the lawn mowing thing made me laugh, because I'm definitely not that. I mean, I get flack because maybe 2 weeks ago, Lindsay went to school. I have three kids that go to three different schools. So our morning's a little busy and Lindsay's the last one to go.
Yeah.
So she's the last one to go. So she's kind of left to get ready by herself, but she's totally capable. She's 12 years old. She left her lunch at home. I had no idea. I dropped her off at school. She didn't realize it. I went off, ran a couple errands, came home later, finally dawned on me, maybe around like 10:30 or so, that her lunch was there. I'm like, oh, well, she's going to be hungry today, but she'll figure it out. So I told my friend when I saw my friend later, I kind of laughed about it. And she said, you didn't go take her lunch to school for her? I'm like, well, no, what does that teach her? Like, if she's like, she'll figure it out. She likes to buy lunch on occasion. Like,
she'll bum money off her friends.
Yeah, there's money on her account. So she's not going to starve. She can go get something else to eat. But I kind of got some flack. And then I told my husband that night. And he said the same thing. Why didn't you take her your lunch? And I was like, I had to stop and go, geez, maybe I'm a really bad parent.
Yeah, maybe helicopter is the new norm.
Maybe I'm just lazy and not a good parent. But let me tell you, that child has not forgotten her lunch since then, and she survived. She didn't starve to death. She managed just fine, grabbed something at school. All was good. Lesson learned.
And she didn't call home to ask you.
She didn't call home to ask
you. See, most of these kids are calling home, forgot their water bottle. Oh, yeah. Dad needs to go from work, get the... Not that there isn't water at school, but it's right. not a water... It's not,
not a water bottle.
And not just the water bottles you buy at the store, but the... Special kind
oh, yeah.
of bottle you
carry around. Hydro flasks or whatever. Yes. Yeah. Oh, yeah. The fancy one.
So it says lawnmower parents go to whatever lengths necessary to prevent their child from having to face adversity, struggle, or failure. Instead of preparing children for challenges, they mow obstacles down so kids won't experience them in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
Man, we are not serving our kids well.
No, not at all.
And if that's true, then what it talks about is kids get up older in life, and that's why they're going to college, they're going whatever, and they don't even know how to deal with a conflict, a struggle, mm-hmm. because they've been protected from it their whole lives.
Right.
And you can't really blame the kid for that. Nope. You want to grab the parent by the throat and say, would you stop doing these
yeah.
things? Your kid's life is a struggle.
Mm-hmm.
I get that email all the time from people who just can't believe something horrible has gone on in their life, or that God would allow this to happen. Mm-hmm. And I don't believe God allows stuff to happen. That's a whole nother discussion that, that people are really freaked out about. That came up in Oklahoma a few times. And I said, I don't believe God allows stuff. And it's like, you don't believe in the sovereignty of God? Yes, I do. I can believe in both of those things at the same time. God is sovereign above all. God will wind up this age exactly like he wants to. But he's not sitting up there saying, you know what? I'm going to allow this 3-year-old girl to be raped by her uncle today, and I'm going to allow this accident over here. And if that's the kind of God you serve an abusive God, and I'm not going to join you there.
Mm-hmm.
The world is in the hands of the evil one. It's not God doing these things. It's God winning against what darkness does.
Right.
And so it's not that he can't be amazing in any struggle you have, any tragedy that comes your way. God does great stuff through tragedy,
mm-hmm.
but he's not orchestrating or even allowing. I hate that language now.
Right.
Freaks people out because it's like, that's the whole thing about why if God allows it, I can handle it. If I'm just at the whim of a world out of sync with the creator, hey, we're in that world. I'd rather people know the truth.
Right.
And this trying to keep your kids from struggle. I think it's amazing that I think it's great parenting to go, I think it's amazing that Lindsay didn't call for her lunch.
I mean, girl's got a cell phone, so I could have gotten a text. Hey, my lunch is at home.
Yeah, can you bring my lunch?
Yeah.
And then you would have said no.
Right. I was going to say, I think my kids know me and they know, oops, I messed up today. So, and you know, Lindsay, if she's going to forget her lunch, she's just happy to buy her lunch. My other two, not so much. So I'm not sure what they would have done. But I don't think either one of them would have called. I think they would have known, oops, I messed up. But, you know, and I have
And mommy doesn't love me enough to bring my
I know. I'm oh man, they're gonna have problems. I'm gonna need to pay for their therapies. Isn't it Arnita who said that?
Arnita said she'll pay for the first two or three.
Yeah,
I
might have to do that for my kids.
Yeah,
but what I hope is that there's consequences. There's consequences for mistakes or there's in the world and there's and it just always is, and it's how you deal with it and being resourceful. I'm hoping that I'm teaching my kids that. If there's a mistake, let's figure it out. Or, and with Amy, you know, she's getting older. So she'll come home with like some issue or some problem. And I know a lot of parents will jump in and here's what you should do. I'm the parent that asks, what are you going to do about that? I want her to start thinking, how can I solve this myself? Yeah, of course, I'm happy to sit there and run through ideas with her and talk her through stuff.
Right.
And sometimes she'll say, well, I think I'm going to do this. And I'll be like, okay. And I'll totally support her. And I know in my, you know, maybe there would be something else that might be better, but okay, that's a good place to start. And then it's kind of following up with her and talking to her about it and talking through it the next day, you know, so how did that go? You know, what are you going to do now? Like maybe that didn't work out so great, but I think that's important skills to teach your kids. I mean, yeah, I could swoop in and say, oh, well, you need to do this, there, problem fixed. But.
And that's hard. That's hard parenting though, isn't it?
Oh yeah. It's hard to watch them struggle.
It really is. And I think that's what most parents, why these lawnmower parents, which is, I think it, this name is not out there in the culture beyond this one article, probably.
Probably.
Yeah. Somebody had to coin a new term. But the whole idea of just, I'm going to keep my child's life struggle free as an act of love. That's how we get back to God, right? Because if struggle is in my life, then God doesn't love me. That's people equate love with protecting from struggle.
Yeah.
And this is asking us to believe that love inhabits the struggle because life is about struggle. And I'll help you not struggle. I mean, I'm your dad, man. I care about you. If you're going through a difficult time,
whatever,
I'm going to do what I can to help you. Mm-hmm. But to really know I can't solve your struggle for you.
Right.
And that's a fine line because I think people get really confused about that.
Yeah, for sure.
And then somebody doesn't fix my struggle, doesn't really love me. And your kids could go into a room. Lindsay could have gone into, mom didn't love me. She didn't have to bring my lunch to school.
Oh, yeah.
And your dad,
would have agreed. Next time, call me.
I would have brought it for you. But instead, she learned to navigate the day.
Yeah.
And she learned now the lunch is the first thing on her mind when she leaves.
Yeah.
And loving our kids in purpose does a lot of that. Consequences are a great teacher. Mm-hmm. And if parents are inside and alongside in the consequences, instead of mitigating all the consequences, you're actually doing better parenting.
Yeah.
But I don't think people see it that way.
No, because it's hard. I mean, it's definitely hard to watch your kids hurt or watch your kids struggle and know that you could probably do something to fix it right now, but I'm going to wait and I'm going to let them kind of see if they can work through this a little bit too. But I mean, some of the biggest struggles in my life is where I found God the most, is when I searched him out the most. And so part of me hopes that in their struggles, that is a way that, I'm going to teach that too. Well, let's pray about this. I'm not just going to try to solve this for you. I'm here to help you with it. Let's give it to God. And I want to teach my kids those things, not just I'm going to swoop in and fix the whole thing so you don't have to worry about it.
Yeah. We are creating a generation that has no idea what to do when they actually encounter struggle. A generation who panics or shuts down at the mere idea of failure. A generation for whom failure is far too painful, leaving them with coping mechanisms like addiction, blame, and internalization. The list goes on. If we eliminate all struggle in children's younger years, they will not arrive at adulthood magically equipped to deal with failure. Indeed, childhood is when we learn these skills.
Mm-hmm.
Man, this article's worth it just for that paragraph right there.
Yeah.
And it's so hard. It's so hard. I know when we started that more intentionally when you guys turned 12.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the decisions that we used to make for you, we didn't make for you so much, which kind of feeds into some of the upcoming chapters in the book that we kind of play with now and then,
mm-hmm.
which is authority. And, it's coming down. It's making your kid just an automaton. I will tell you what to do and you will do it.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of, really learning the skills of coping with struggle and coping with failure. You made a mistake. There's consequences to failure. And people who don't handle that well, I said probably 5 times on the Oklahoma trip to somebody, there's not a mistake you make that God isn't bigger than.
Yeah.
And that God's not around you trying to make sure you're never going to make a mistake. Or if you do make a mistake, now you've committed the unpardonable sin and God's going to... No, God can inhabit our mistakes and the consequences thereof and use those for good. Like you said, in our struggles is where God makes himself known.
Yeah. Yeah. And I want to teach my kids that. I really do. I want them to leave my home when they're 18 or whenever they are, whatever that is. And I want them to know how to do that, how to seek out God, how to problem solve on their own. Like, those are things that are important to me to teach my kids. So
do you feel like you got that? Here we go. Go ahead. Take a shot.
Yeah. I think I had a good head on my shoulders.
I think mom would have brought your lunch.
Probably. Yeah, she would have.
I think I probably wouldn't have.
Oh.
That's interesting. I'd be interested.
She probably would have.
Mom's a server, man. Mom's
anything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But she let you guys go through struggles, right? I'm trying to think. I know we did the decision-making thing as you got older. We put things in your hands. You would even say, well, what should I do? I would say, well, maybe talk to God and find out what he wants you to do.
Mm-hmm.
And you would. And you come back saying, I feel like God's put this in my heart. It was the worst of the two choices, too. I was like, wow, I thought you were going to talk about it. God just always wants what I want.
But
you really had a sense that God had you doing something that you wouldn't otherwise, you wouldn't have chosen to do.
And I think being raised that way is what's kind of directed me now. Like, when I read that helicoptering thing so long ago, I'm like, gosh, this is not how I want to raise my kids. And so I really veered in the other direction, very quickly. And so I think that fed into that I was kind of raised that way to make my own decisions and to kind of figure it out on my own. And, having a 15-year-old, she's at that age where I want her to figure it out on her own. I want her to kind of go down that road and start. I'm obviously, I want to be here as support 100%, but I want her to know what it's like because I'm still home to help her. I'm still there. I'm right, you know, down the hall if she needs me. I'm not, she's not off at college yet. So this is the time where she can start doing that for herself. What are you going to, these lawnmower parents, like I keep thinking when I was reading that, what happens to these kids when they go and leave the house and mom and dad can't, you know, I mean, it just, it's so sad.
Well, like the, she says here, here's how they respond. If they get into college and something doesn't go the way they're supposed to, they bomb their first test or whatever. They blame the professor. They call home and beg their parents to intervene. They have a mental breakdown or make themselves miserable. They write nasty reviews online about the professor and their miserable class. Begin planning for the inevitable destruction of their college career and future. Assume they failed because they're stupid. Collapse in on themselves and give up completely and stop trying. Now, who wants their kid going through that?
Yeah, that's way harder than watching them try to figure that out now.
But that's always, and go back to lawn mowing. It's, I remember when we taught Andy to mow the lawn. I don't know why you got off of it. We did that.
I did laundry and mopped floors and.
Yeah, you did. But we had that, very sexist approach to household chores, I guess. But I remember teaching Andy to mow the lawn going, it would be far easier for me and take less time for me to mow the lawn.
Right.
As to teach somebody to mow the lawn and to edge and to do all the things that are part of that. Yet learning to do all those things is an important, not just because I'm going to get out of the work eventually, which was my plan. That's what I hated when he went away for college, man. What? What lawnmower? We still have a lawnmower? I haven't seen a lawnmower in years. But yeah, but the other thing is it takes a lot more energy
a lot more time.
Equip somebody than it takes to just make decisions and intervene and call up the school and fix the problem and go home from work, grab the particular little unique water bottle and drive it down to my daughter who will have a miserable day at school if she doesn't have the right water bottle.
Right. Oh yeah. I was the same way teaching my kids chores. I mean, it's so much work, but it teaches them something later. And now they have responsibility for something and they're contributing to the house and helping out. And it's important.
Yeah. So she writes, I can't imagine how much worse my anxiety would be if my parents had taught me that my anxiety was something to be feared and avoided, not dealt with head on. Had I been raised to shy away from anything outside my comfort zone instead of process and work through my discomfort? Had I received the message as a child that my parents, not me, were the only ones equipped to handle the challenges in my life? Mm. So, man, I think you're doing the better thing, even if you're catching a little flack for not taking down much chore or not buying 5,000 water bottles at Costco. Or,
I may regret that one later, too. Who knows?
I think the tap will still work. I really can't imagine they're going to shut off the whole water system here. But and I see so when I read stuff like this, because I'm not actively parenting these days. I'm instead working to spoil children. That's my job now. You'll find out someday.
Someday, yeah.
Yeah,
sure.
The whole reason to have children is to have grandchildren.
Grandkids later.
Yeah, yeah. All it's a deal. But I what was I going to say? Get up on grandparenting and I got lost.
That's my trick.
Maybe I'm not over the Oklahoma trip yet.
Yeah, there's...
Shoot.
Maybe not. You can go back and record and say you're wrong.
I know. The thing about reading articles like this that always gets me thinking, because I'm not actively doing the parenting thing today, is how much this sorts out in our relationship with God as our Father. Mm-hmm. How much people really don't want to struggle through something with God. They want God to just fix it. Mm-hmm. Like we had this good conversation Saturday evening and someone was saying, you know, they're going through a really anxious situation as a family, a couple of things going on. And just say, you know, I asked God to take my anxiety away and he didn't do it. And I look at him, I said, of course he wouldn't do it. And he go, what? I said, I used to pray the same prayer. I used to pray, God, take my anxiety away because anxiety is the problem. No, anxiety is the symptom. Mm-hmm. The problem is somewhere else. It'd be like putting your hand on a hot stove, asking God to take the pain away instead of taking the hand away. And I think God, the idea that God never wants us out of our comfort zone, or if we're out of our comfort zone, it's proof that God's not with us or God doesn't love us or that I'm not doing the right thing, or when just anxiety means there's something about his love I don't know that if I knew it, I could be at rest in the conflict.
Right.
And when she wrote that whole last paragraph about if I had a fear of anxiety, if I didn't know how to handle a difficult situation, and I know people, I know adults like that who have somehow gotten the idea that life in God was meant to be flawless and comfortable and easy, and nothing bad comes my way. And instead of, and this is why I like Brene Brown, one thing she said, we were born for struggle. This mm-hmm. world is about struggle. From yep. the day you were born to the day you die, it's struggle. It's struggle to find who you are, your place in the world. It's struggle against the elements of society. Right. It's struggle against all these stupid aches and pains of old age. Oh, it's yeah. struggle against the coronavirus. It's struggle against what. My dad's 94. He's got to have surgery next week or yeah. two, a couple weeks. Yeah. So life is about struggle. And the mm-hmm. idea that, no, God's this guy's little magic wand, and he's going to take my anxiety away or take my fear away or take this away. No, he wants you to learn how to live inside of him in a way that that anxiety doesn't own you, that discomfort doesn't own you, and that he gets to do even bigger things in our life. That's how I read these articles, because I'm not doing the parenting thing.
Right.
And I hope people who listen to this get that idea that God's big enough to walk. There's nothing going on in my life that God's not bigger than. Now, he's not going to fix it. Mm-hmm. He's going to come in with me as I invite him and walk with me through it and yeah. teach me ways to navigate pain, discomfort, failure, struggle, because life's going to keep throwing that at you. We joked about betrayal earlier. The first time I got betrayed, which was in high school. I think, boy, that feels bad. I don't ever go through yeah. that again. Little did I know, it was basic training. Yeah. It was okay, dude. Stuff's coming up. You have no idea about.
This is just the tip of the iceberg.
If you can't get past this little thing here in high school, you're never going to be ready for what's coming when you're 42 or 57 mm-hmm. or 64. Mm-hmm. You're just not going to be ready for mm-hmm. it. And if we see life that way, then maybe we wouldn't helicopter or lawnmower our kids. Maybe,
right.
maybe we'd just do what you're doing, which I think is brilliant.
Oh, thank you.
I think you've chosen the better portion. It's amazing that the people around you don't see it that way.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll make Tyler listen to this. Maybe we'll put it up at your local school.
No. I think it's, I think that getting flack for it makes me laugh. But it makes me stop and go, oh, shoot, am I wrong? Am I doing this wrong? But I do. I think I have, I've struggled through some things in my life. And what I come away from in almost every circumstance is I know more about God than I knew before this happened. And I have a better relationship, a deeper understanding of him, of his love. And so I hope that through struggles, that's what my kids can walk away with.
And you have more confidence to navigate life, right?
Yeah.
So
when something else
comes your way, you're not going, oh, crud. You're just going, okay, I'll handle this too. Get through it.
Yeah. And if you think that God's walking around with a magic wand somehow, aren't you always disappointed because struggle's always coming around the corner again? I don't want to teach my kids that. I want them to know that he's there to walk with you through all of it.
That's one thing we intentionally did, and we prayed with you kids when you guys were younger, is we didn't want to pray about stuff that made God seem less real. Mm-hmm. And by that, when you had the flu, we're going to pray against this flu. We're going to pray for healing. Because we knew you guys would get to the age where you're going, okay, the kids at school not getting prayed for with the flu are healing about the same time the kids are who are being prayed for.
Yeah.
So we would ask, we'd ask God, if you want to heal this, great. But we'd also talk about learning to endure and learning to persevere with the swimming. I don't know if you remember the swimming lesson thing, your first swimming lesson, even though you became quite the swimmer. Your first swimming lesson really freaked you out being in the water.
Yeah, I remember.
Yeah, and we just mm-hmm. said, hey, let's pray and just know God's with you and he can overcome this fear with you in you. I think that was really... We didn't want to just pray these fairy godmother prayers that right. God was never going to do. Mm-hmm. You stubbed your toe. Let's pray and they'll all be healed by tomorrow morning.
Yeah.
And then tomorrow morning it's all swollen up and black and blue and hurts. And then at 64, you're having surgery on the dumb toe because you didn't get it fixed when you were younger, all that stuff. I think that is a value. And if we don't, we teach people this yucky view of God that it'd be great if it were true, but it's horrible when it's not true. And so people are constantly disappointed. That God doesn't do what I think a God who loves me would do.
Right.
If being a loving parent means taking your kids lunch when they forget it, then you'll want a God like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then you won't know what to do when God's saying, you know what? I'm bigger than this.
Right.
And I want you to learn that. I want you to grow and discover. If I kept you comfortable your whole life, you'd be a wuss.
Yeah.
Maybe. I thought of other words. But I'll go with one.
That works.
By the way,
I
had a bone to pick with you.
Oh, no.
But we don't have any more time. So
oh, good.
Next, I just remembered.
Saved by the timer.
Next time.
Thank you for traveling with us today on The God Journey. You can join this conversation by visiting thegodjourney.com.